Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Yo, welcome back. It is a Gulf Coast sunny morning with Plain Gardening, and we get to talk about really fun things today. We got in a discussion of nuts and hickory nuts and lots of other types of nuts, and we're going to get back to that soon. We got talking about what kind of vegetables we're going to grow this time of year. But David Hubble has been very patient. David, thank you. Because I know he's spending a sunny morning with us, and he could be doing lots of other things. But we wanted to talk about gumbo. And we talked about traditional recipes for gumbo, and they're not necessarily the kinds of recipes that we've been taught in modern times to believe that were sort of essential to gumbo. So there was kind of a doctrinaire view that gumbo had to be made from something called the Holy Trinity, which was celery and bell pepper and onion. And one of my problems with that, One of my problems with that whole idea of having just the Holy Trinity make your gumbo is that it just wasn't available traditionally along the Gulf Coast. And any ingredient in gumbo wasn't going to be available all year long. So gumbo must have had its origins in different kinds of ingredients. And Dave and I, in our last hour, we talked about the word gumbo, which is interesting. It may have two origins. One is from an African word, there are two etymologies that sort of lead us to the word gumbo. One is it's possible it is from an African word, which basically means okra. And so the idea is that gumbo was about using okra as a thickener. But there's also an older tradition of gumbo, we think, that may be related to an old Choctaw word. Because this was Choctaw country in those days, or the people who have eventually assembled to be the Choctaw Confederacy, those gumbo ingredients included something called, we now call, phyllo. You've heard the song. Phyllo is probably, and there's some debate about it, but it's probably sassafras. And so the thought is that the word gumbo may come from a Choctaw word meaning sassafras. And it's as reasonable to explain it that way as it is to explain it from the African origin. But what it tells me is that both were probably very important to the early development of something we now call gumbo. So phyllo was also a great thickener for these soups, and it was used both of them were used instead of roux to make gumbos thicker and more substantial, less soup-like and more gumbo-like, more of that dark quality that gumbos have, that rich, deep, stew-like, soup-like, but neither stew nor soup, just gumbo-like. David, what are some other things that we could be using in gumbo that you're seeing in old recipes? Do you see other thoughts about how to make gumbos?
Well, if you look in the early, like I said, you go back to the 1870s and before, you'll even see things that'll probably scare people today because they discuss putting things like green corn in your gumbo, or depending on what side of the argument you're on, tomatoes. Some people think you have to have tomatoes, some don't. So you're seeing things like that, even lima beans and things like that, you see in some early gumbo recipes. But most of those were the ones that had to kind of deal with an okra base. by the 1870s, I'm seeing a breakdown of gumbo filet or okra gumbo. So they're very specific in those type of things by about at least the 1870s.
Yeah, and isn't that interesting how we've come to standardize it, and we've said, well, gumbo can only be made one way. But
right.
Inevitably, and I want to stress this, no matter how good a particular type of gumbo is, and okra gumbo is just, you know, I think okra gumbo is just fine. I think it's beautiful. But traditionally, you couldn't have made it out of okra all year long. So you had to switch to other ingredients at certain times of year. So if you're, you know, if the white shrimp are coming in, maybe over winter, or you wanted to do something over winter with your gumbo, you weren't going to make it out of okra because you couldn't have used it as a thickener then. So you had to use something else. You had to think about your gumbo in a different way, and your food in a different way. So it's interesting. It is interesting. Yeah.
I was going to say, that also might have given rise to the use of roux, even though roux are traditionally a French style of cooking. You don't see roux very often in these old recipes as well. So, I mean, the main thing is, like you said, you're using filet, okra, or the roux as a thickening agent, but really we end up using two of them today.
Right.
One, you know, and so... So I think that's how they kind of got around. That was one of the bases, is that you had to have that type of thing to give it that consistency. And at least with the filet, you could keep it after you dry it out and pulverize it. You could pretty much use that throughout the year as long as you had a fresh supply of you replenished.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's interesting they describe like the okra gumbo is, I can think of the right way to say it, mucilaginous.
Mucilaginous, yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's a term that doesn't sound very appealing today, but I saw at least two recipes describing that you want to get it to that state.
Yeah, and that is very traditional in a lot of cooking. It's certainly traditional in a lot of Choctaw cooking we read about, and in other parts of the world, that kind of thickening quality that okra and filet powder can bring to dishes. There's lots of other vegetables in other parts of the world that they use to bring that kind of quality out of their dishes. And it is an important part of gumbo. It is a different quality than having a roux, though, isn't it? And I love roux. I think they're great, but it's very different. But, you know, David...
Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
Now, all I was going to add is that, you know, as far as, like, the modern gumbos that you described, you know, I start seeing in the late 20s, early 30s, the mentioning of using celery more. And then by the mid-40s, you start seeing the bell peppers. And then the Trinity, as we really know it, in the roux by the mid-50s to 60s. Then it kind of makes sense. Like you said, Paul Prudhomme would have learned from his mother, and that would have been the time he was growing up. And I think that's like a lot of everybody today. Their grandmothers or mothers would have learned during that time period, and that's how it kind of got centralized as far as that kind of basis.
You know, there's a funny video, and I saw one time of an interview with Paul Prudhomme, and he's talking about the gumbo, and he's talking about the Holy Trinity, and he says it has to be done this way. It's got to be. This is the way we do it. This is the way you should learn to make it. And then at some point in the interview, he says, you know, I grew up with gumbos in Opelousas, and my mother made these gumbos, and he said, but I wonder whether she would really like my gumbo or not. She might not approve of it, which was very interesting. So I would bet that we don't have Paul to ask anymore, unfortunately, but I would be interested to know whether his mother used bell peppers in hers. It may have been too early, even in Opelousas. I mean, Opelousas, Publix was kind of scarce around Opelousas in the 40s and 50s, and bell peppers probably would have been a little scarce too, but it's an interesting question. Yeah. David, you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. I didn't know if you. I didn't know a few seconds before you had to go to break.
Yep, yep. So we're now at break. Hey, we're going to be back. David, it's been a lot of fun talking about this. We've got a lot more to talk about. We'll have to revisit very soon. We've got to figure out your squash. And honest to goodness, I still don't know what it is. But let's give it another week, and maybe it'll reveal itself a little better.
Okay. I'll keep it going.
David, thank you. We're gonna be back here in just a minute. Give us a call, 251-343-0106.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It is a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. David Hubble is just incredibly generous with his time. One of the really interesting things he's working on is melatonin right now, and that's just a great subject. Before the show is out, I'm going to give you an address if you're interested in melatonin and in reviving this great Gulf Coast tradition, this great vegetable for the Gulf Coast. And I should say the great, it sort of sounds like Moby Dick, the white melatonin. We're out looking for this white melatonin that was very much a part of our Gulf Coast traditions at one time, apparently, and trying to resurrect it, a really interesting thing. We're going to be back. And David, thank you. Interesting discussion on gumbo, a great lesson for me and how recipes were thought about gumbo. So traditional recipes, oh man, I don't know if we can say this out loud. David, I know, is afraid to say it out loud. Traditional recipes for gumbo from Louisiana in the 19th century used corn. What do you think about that? Traditional recipes for melaton for gumbo in the 19th century used tomatoes. Ooh. Think about that. Well, that's interesting. And Aunt Joanne. You know, Aunt Joanne's gumbo, if I remember correctly. I know Aunt Joanne used tomatoes. She may have used corn. I can't rule that out. It's interesting. And so we've kind of come up with a doctrinaire view of what should be in gumbo. I love okra in gumbo. It's a great thing, Greg. I love the okra in gumbo, but it's interesting to see that we've sort of tried to make this little formula. And in some cases, the formula was based on what you got at the grocery store, not what came out of the land. And that's really unfortunate. That's really a degeneration of what gumbo could be. Because bell peppers, my friends, bell peppers, not good. Not one of the best peppers you could use. Bell peppers were basically developed so that they could ship them on a truck. Oh, I shouldn't have said that out loud. Please forgive me. But it's true. David is sending me this thing called a melaton gumbo, which I'm very interested in. We're going to look it up. I might share it again next week. But we got a lot of questions this week. Aunt Leslie's melaton gumbo. I got to study. No, it's Austin Leslie's melaton gumbo. I got to study this thing. It looks beautiful. It looks really cool. Looks like a really good thing. So Tony in Fowl River asked me, what am I going to do? I've got these eggplants. What am I going to do with them? Well, make a gumbo. There's nothing wrong with making an eggplant gumbo. Really fine thing. And eggplants have been around in Louisiana for a long time, long enough that there are actually some varieties of eggplants that come specifically now that have been strains from Louisiana, and I know David's been working on them. They make a great gumbo. They'd be delicious. You want other things in there with the eggplant, but they would be great in a gumbo. One of the other good things with eggplants is let me just say it, baba ganoush, and we can call it something else now that we brought it here, but I would make, which is a paste, basically made from eggplants that have been cooked. It really can be very delicious. and you get it in Mediterranean restaurants. I think we could do a great job making a Gulf Coast version of baba ganoush. We don't have to call it baba ganoush if we want. We could honor the fact that we got the idea from baba ganoush somehow, but it could be our very distinctive thing. You know, we actually grow sesame pretty well here in Alabama and in Mississippi and Louisiana along the Gulf Coast. So it's not weird to think that sesame seed and eggplant together could be a Gulf Coast tradition with a little bit of lemon. Great thing to do. Listen, here's another way. Use it on pizzas. Eggplant pizzas are absolutely delicious. I love eggplant roasted. One of the things I love to do is eggplant, roast them in the oven. If you've never done that, slice them thin, roast them in the oven. They are absolutely delicious. A little bit of salt and pepper. There are so many ways to use eggplants. It's a lot of fun. A lot of other questions by text that I'm trying to get to, but we got a lot of callers. James, I'm listening. What's up?
Hey, Bill.
You there?
This is James in Magnolia Springs.
How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. I've talked to you a couple of times about my Satsuma trees, and they've been doing fine. And I have two of them, and they're right by each other. And all of a sudden, one of them has just turned completely brown, just overnight. And I looked up root rot, and that looks like what it is. But this is a real old plant, probably 20, 25 years old. And I just wonder if you have any. I sent you a text picture of it. I didn't know whether you had a chance to look at that or not, or if you had any thoughts about that.
Well, I'll tell you, the text picture has not come in yet. And I will take a look at it. It does sound like when you get a sudden death like that, it sounds very much like a Phytophthora. Is there, you know, we had, it's been a dry spring and in general. And that can sometimes stress trees. And sometimes when you get these heavy, heavy rains after a dry period, the roots are already suffering from cracks. They're already, they already have lots of openings where they can be invaded by disease because of the drought period leading up to it. There are various reasons why that can happen. So the roots are already damaged, and then we get these really wet periods where we got, like, I guess you got a lot of rain from that tropical storm. Did you get a pretty good bit of rain from the tropical storm?
Yeah, I did, and it was just a few days after that that it just went just
yeah.
Dry.
Yeah, so that's really sudden. That's even more sudden than you normally see from Phytophthora. That's a tough question, but I'm going to be looking for that picture, and okay. I'm going to be thinking about it. Send me you've already sent it to me. It may be because it had a lot of information attached that it's slowly coming into my computer, and I haven't seen it yet, but I will take a look for that, look at that. Why don't you call me back next week and when we can look at the picture more closely, and let's see if there's any clues there, and give me a broader context with the photo too. Let me see what's around that tree, and I might be able to make
Okay, I'll do that. And I think the text was sent from my wife's account.
I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, she hadn't seen it yet.
There we go.
Did she text it to you?
Yeah, that's right. Just text it to me at 343-0106, 343-0106. You can send me the picture just by text. Yeah.
All right, Bill.
One more question. I'm going to text them right now, but one more question in the meantime. So the two,
yes, ma'am,
the trunks of the trees are only about 8 inches apart from each other. So I don't know if that's one tree or two trees. But one of the trunks, you can see the tree is almost dead. The other one right next to it is still green. Is it likely that we're going to lose the one right next to it? And again, it could be the same tree. I just don't know what's under the ground.
Yeah, and Bill, I'll yeah, probably you a picture of the of where it comes out of the ground.
But yeah, that's likely that, we're going to use lose the one right next to it.
You need to send me a picture of the of these two trunks up close too, because okay, that's a curious right thing, now. And I got to figure that one out. Let's. I got a lot of figuring to do on this one. This is this is an odd one. So let me see those pictures.
All right, and I'll get you all back next week.
That sounds good. Let me study on it.
All right.
Thanks.
Thank you, Bill.
Hey, so we're going to figure that one out. We'll figure it out somehow. David said, eggplant casserole with crab meat. Man, does that sound good. Eggplant casserole with crab meat or shrimp or ham. Listen. There's so many things to do with eggplant. It's really fun. It's a really great thing, Tony. I hope that helped. Somebody sent me a beautiful picture. I've only got a second here of something. It's our native honeysuckle, not the invasive Japanese honeysuckle, but something far prettier. Our native honeysuckle, the coral honeysuckle. It doesn't have a lot of fragrance, but it is. Boy, is it beautiful. That native coral honeysuckle, one of the most beautiful wild plants out there. Really cool thing. And we're going to be back.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It is a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Lots of questions that I haven't been able to get around to. Carol, I hope you're still out there. Carol and Baymanette sent me a question earlier. We were talking about nut trees. And we've talked a lot about Carol's yard here and trying to find our way through it and try to explore what it means and what it's got. And one of the things she said, so what kind of nut trees would I find around my yard in Baymanette? And Carol has sort of a longleaf forest, and it would have been longleaf, incredible longleaf forest. It would have had so many interesting things to eat in it originally. You know, it's just one of those kinds of places. I sometimes think somebody asked me, well, you're in prison. You're in prison for doing whatever terrible thing you did, and you have your last meal coming up. What would your last meal be? And my last meal would be to walk through a longleaf pine forest and just pick and eat whatever I could. That would be my last meal. Muscadines and berries of all types and chew on some toothache grass. And Carol, if I were looking for nuts, I would look for that chinkapin. Chinkapin is really one of the finest nuts out there. It is absolutely beautiful. It is absolutely delicious. It's one of the few. We now grow Chinese chestnuts because we don't have the American chestnut anymore because we are walking contagions, and because we brought, in the same way we brought COVID on ourselves, which we did, we brought other things on ourselves, like chestnut blight and a lot of other diseases that have affected and lessened the world we live in because we're just walking contagions. But listen, the cool thing is that chinkapin is still out there, and it has the flavor that most closely resembles American chestnut. It is absolutely a delicious little nut, and chinkapin is one of the trees you want to look for. There might be some remnants in that forest. Chinkapin suffers when there's not fire. It suffers if there's too much fire, but it suffers if there's not enough, too. And sometimes we're seeing a chinkapin is becoming much rarer than it used to be. But it's a good old name, isn't it? Good old southern name, chinkapin. It's very, very important. Chinkapin would have been one of the great nuts that people in the longleaf forest would have looked for. There's another one, and the hickories are very good, even in longleaf forest, where we think of a longleaf pine forest as dominated by longleaf, and it usually is. But there's usually some mockernut hickories in there, And on certain soils, you might have had southern shagbark and some of the other shagbarks. But mockernut hickory is not a bad-tasting nut. It's actually quite good. People give up on it because they didn't understand as much about hickories as the First Nations, the people who first lived here, did. And we did as much as we could to extinguish the knowledge that they had. A crazy thing we did. But here's what we would have learned from them. We would have learned that you don't treat a hickory nut like you treat a pecan. You don't go in and crack it and then try to pick it out with a little... No, that's not what you do. You crush the whole shell, not the big outer husk, but you crush the shell with the meat together and boil them together. And a couple of things happens. One, oftentimes the meat will float to the top, but with something like mockernut, you can make a great milk out of that, both the shell and the meat, and it's absolutely delicious. And that's how you get around the fact that mockernut has an awful big shell with only a little bit of meat. But don't worry about it. It makes a great nut. So mockernut hickory, a great hickory for us, a really interesting way of doing that. I'm looking at, I've got lots of pictures. It looks like somebody has sent me a picture of what appears to be a weeping mulberry. Now, I can't tell. It looks like it's grafted. And that's what happens with these weeping mulberries. But I think that's what it is, Chris. It appears to be weeping mulberry. Let's see if you've got any more detailed pictures. I don't know how good the fruits are going to be, but it appears to be a mulberry, and it looks like one of these ornamental weeping mulberries that somebody designed. And the fruits may be so-so. So John got a Father's Day present, a mini greenhouse. And John, I've been thinking about it. And John, we need to make the kids happy. But let me tell you, with the mini greenhouse, I don't think you're going to make them happy until this winter. You don't want to use that greenhouse right now. There are lots of seeds that you can be starting. This is kind of your last chance, but you could start tomato seeds right now. You'll need sun to start them. You'll need to keep that soil a little warm, but tomatoes are a great thing. It's a great thing, and you can start them in containers. You could still have time on the Gulf Coast. A really neat thing is you can still start eggplants now. You can still start peppers now, and this is a great time. If you want to keep your peppers over winter and you want to grow some of the great Caribbean peppers, it's a great time to do it. Call me if that's what you want to do. Okra, sow it right in the ground. Don't start it in a container. Soak your seeds overnight. Sow those okra seeds right now. It's a great time to sow all types of watermelon. Great time for melons of all type. This is the time I recommend. And you can call me and ask me why. Melons, perfect time of year to start melons because they will ripen during the dry period in September and October, and that will really concentrate the flavor. So melons, great time to do it. Okra, eggplant. What am I missing? There's peas. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. Peas. You know, did I mention the word peas? And we're not talking green peas. We're not talking sugar snaps. We're not talking those spring peas. We're talking summer peas. We're talking about the great tradition of growing peas, field peas, cow peas, pink eye purple hulls, Mississippi silver. There's a bunch of them, a lot of traditional peas out there. Great time to start those. It's not too late to start lima beans. I love lima beans. And I love pole beans, and you know, I actually think this is one of the better times to start them now. Go ahead and start them in the garden. They're going to grow during the summer. They're going to produce in September and October and November when it's a little dry, and it's a great time to do it. Not a bad time at all. All of these things can be started now. I probably left something out, but, boy, that gives you a lot to run with. And this fall, I think that greenhouse is going to come in handy, this fall and winter. And you tell the kids that, boy, this is the best thing you could ever. This fall, I'm going to use this greenhouse all the time. But obviously, you don't want to make it any hotter right now, right? So let's don't do that. But there's lots of things to plant, lots of things to plant. There's a caller. I hear who's calling now, Ian? Carl, I'm listening. What's up?
Hey, Bill. Hey, man. Good morning. I'm having a issue with my bay leaf tree. Well, my bay leaf trees now. We've had it for going on 20 years, and we bought it as a sprig, and it grew up big, and then we divided it up, and it was doing great for the longest time. And then the last couple of years, it just keeps getting spotty mold. And I have done everything I can, I thought I could do, and washing it with the soap and spraying under the leaves. And I was just wondering if you had some advice. Because you can't
spotty
put it in
mold.
Soup the way they look now.
Sooty mold, S-O-O-T. So what you're
mold.
Getting
yeah,
is...
Yeah,
right. Yeah, well, and so it's... Is this tree sitting under another tree?
Well, we actually... They've lived their whole life in pots, big pots.
Yeah.
But we've tried them in the sun. We've tried them out and we tried them in the shade. We tried them everywhere, and it just won't... I've actually taken them out of the pot.
It's still getting sooty mold. So,
yeah, it's, the black... goofy stuff,
yeah,
ugly stuff on the leaves.
So,
and I've
always been
under the understanding that little bugs that are living there and then doing their business, mold grows on it.
Let's come back. Let's talk about what sooty mold is. The sooty mold is actually not the big problem. It may look unsightly, but it's not the bigger issue. The bigger issue is that there is an insect that lives on the plant that's sucking juices out of the plant. And it's probably develops in the spring. It's probably aphids is my best bet, because aphids are these little tiny, and they're probably green, but they're little tiny creatures, and you'll see them on the young growth as the young growth comes out, and they excrete something we politely call honeydew, which is basically sugary poop. And
called scat.
Yeah, right. And they excrete that sooty poop, that sweet poop, that sugary poop, all over the leaves of the plant, and the sooty mold then grows on the sugary poop.
Right.
So what we've got. So once you see the sugary, once you see the sooty mold, it's too late to control it, because they've started releasing their. You want to look for when the poop gets released, and that's how you control it. So here's my suggestion: go back in spring when you're seeing the new growth grow on these plants. Sounds like they're growing pretty healthily, and you're going to see little aphids all over it. Take your hose and just spray those aphids off with your hose, with a strong blast of the hose.
Right.
And you may not get rid of all of them, but you'll reduce the numbers to the point that there won't be a lot of poop, and you shouldn't have a problem. But it's the timing of doing this that's really important. Soap will work, it can work as well.
I had heard garden soap, and that's what I tried.
Insecticidal soap is fine, but the timing is the key, and you've got to get it on the bugs. So if you don't see the bugs when you're spraying it, it ain't working. So you got to find the bugs first, and then spray them off. And they're probably coming on before you see. In fact, they certainly are developing before you see the sooty mold develop.
Okay, so I need to time this towards springtime instead of this. It's a little too late.
That's right.
All right, bro.
Now
I
you can go ahead
time,
and wash.
And, you have a great day.
You too. We're going to be right back.
6 foot, 7 foot, 8 foot punch.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Oh, man, you thought we were going to make it through the show without hearing that, didn't you? Well, Sorry. But now it's done. Hey, we got, there's a lot of gems, and that's good. There's a lot of bills out in the world, and I'm trying to keep track of all of them sometimes by text, and that makes it hard. One of our gems in Irvington is always sending me really neat observations. Earlier today, he talked about what it was like down at Paget Switch in South Mobile County, and what it was like hunting with bird dogs and quail, hunting for the quail in the 60s. I remembered this is what folks did on Schillinger's Road in the 50s and 60s. Around Mobile, it's just impossible. You know, it could, ooh boy, it could break your heart. It could do worse. It is just, it's hard to think about what a beautiful landscape that was and how we've destroyed it. But with the longleaf pine, and I want to talk about the grasses, Jim, because, you know, we use terms from, we inherit from out west like sagebrush, but actually those, you know, I want to call those broom sedge. Can I call them broom sedge or broom sage? You can call them broom sage if you like, but they're broom sedges is one of the old common names. It's a type of grass, Andropogon grasses, one of the many blue stem grasses, Andropogon virginicus, kind of the grass that held the world together. That's what we call broom sedge, but you know there were a lot of others. There was paintbrush blue stem. It was everywhere. There was there's little blue stem, this incredible grass that just has this great blue foliage and is plum-colored in fall. There was big blue stem. There was Indian grasses. There were three kinds of Indian grass. Man, the Indian grasses were so cool. There was toothache grass. Toothache grasses all in those areas. Just, oh, man. I could talk forever about toothache grass, all these different grasses, and all sorts of other wildflowers that these quail were eating in those longleaf forests, and one of the great centers of grass diversity in the world. And now we've made it Bahia grass because we didn't understand where we were. We didn't understand the importance of where we were. And the quail left us because we didn't want to understand where we were. And the quail left us. It's a terrible thing. Listen, chinkapin trees. Jim asked me about chinkapin trees. Was it a sweet? Chinkapin are just the most wonderfully sweet nut. They are incredibly delicious. Chinkapin, they are really wonderful. Really wonderful trees. Listen, this Satsuma tree, I think I got it figured out. So I got a picture of two Satsumas trunks growing close together. One about, there really are about 8 to 10 inches apart. And it seems like two different trees. One of them died. The other one is surviving. What happened was, and I, you know, I was having a hard time figuring this out, but once I heard they were 8 inches apart, I thought, you know, I bet I know what happened. That tree got planted, and I don't think you guys did it, but that tree got planted way too deep. And what you've got is two different branches from the same tree. Basically, the graft is probably maybe sitting below that. It's planted way too deep. It's amazing that it survived, but it did. And it produced two, what appeared to be two different trees, but actually I think they're the same tree. Now, one half of that tree has died back, and here's why. The roots of the two trees, because they're planted so low, began to wrap. This is a classic symptom, classic situation when you plant trees too deep. The roots begin to wrap around the trunk. And one of those trees, the roots have wrapped around it to the point that it just eventually just strangled it. If you were to dig down deep enough, and I don't know that it's a good idea at this point because you'd have to dig way deep, you're probably going to find that there's a big root that has just wrapped around the trunk or that particular branch and has just cut it off. The drought was probably enough. It's probably not the rainfall so much as the drought. The drought was enough to just kill it. It happened suddenly after the rain. Maybe there was some other things going on there, but I can just about guarantee that it's wrapped roots that have caused that problem. The other branch may survive. It may not have a serious problem with wrapped roots. What can you do about it? Hope for the best, because there's no way to dig down deep enough now to fix that. The tree is too, and I think it may survive. But it's a good lesson. When you plant, don't plant deeply. The roots, you should be able to see the roots of the plant emerging before they get to the soil. Wow. Do you hear what I'm saying? When you plant, you want to see the first root emerge from the trunk above the ground. Above the ground. There you go. Somebody asked me, is it too late to replant rattlesnakes? No. Go ahead and replant those rattlesnakes. They are one of the few beans that I think will do it really well. There's a few others, but rattlesnakes should do it really, really well. I got a caller. We don't have much time, but let's try it. Who's our caller here, Ian? Beverly, I'm listening. What's up?
Okay, well, I've got a problem with my tomatoes, and I don't understand why this year.
Yes, ma'am.
I planted them about March 10. They're Celebrity, Big Boy, and Cherokee Purple.
Yeah.
There are all kinds of green tomatoes. They won't ripen. And the green tomatoes have been on there for about 20 to 30 days.
Well, that's curious. That is curious. Those are the Celebrity should have ripened. Cherokee Purple can be frustratingly slow sometimes. How big were they when you planted them in March?
They were just probably 6 inches tall.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you wouldn't have hurt to have them a little bigger, but that's so they may just not have had enough time. When did you start? Did you start them from seeds?
No, I did not. I bought the plants. But the interesting part is that they have just, I'm wondering if they've got enough foliage to support all the green tomatoes that are on there.
Well, that's a good question. How much sun are these tomatoes in?
They're in 6 to 7 hours of sun.
6 to 7 hours of sun. It sounds like they may not be getting quite enough sun. Why don't you send me a photo and let's take a look at it next week when we have some time to think about it. And let's look at it a little bit carefully. I think they'll go ahead and ripen up at this point. If they are getting 6 or 7 hours of sun, and it's pretty good sun. But let's send me, can you send me a photo of these plants?
Sure. I'm getting, I used to get a blush on the tomato and then pick them and bring them inside and they'd ripen. These are just, I've only had 5 out of about 25 that I've brought in to ripen. They're just dark, I mean, they're just green. They're apple hard.
Yeah, yeah. So send me a picture, and let's see. I think they're not ripening very fast. I think they are ripening, just not very fast. And I need to think about why that is. But send me a picture of them, and let me take a look and see if I can see any more in that picture. Than
okay.
What I'm seeing right now.
I've pulled some of the tomatoes off, leaving a few on there, seeing if they're going to ripen, bringing the other ones in the house and putting them in the window seal. But
I
just don't understand what's going on this year.
All right, send me a picture.
Okay.
We're flat out of time this week. It was kind of fun, wasn't it? Go hunting some leaves, folks. I know how to do it. I can even tell you what kind of shot to use. Give me a call next week.